From Washington, VOA presents Issues in the News.
On the panel this week, Steve Goldstein, Washington Bureau Chief for Market Watch, and Dan Raviv, National Correspondent for Israeli-based I-24 News. Our moderator is CBS Radio contributor Michael Williams.
Welcome, everyone. Here are the issues. The 2018 midterm elections were held, and a divided America decided on a division of power. As the Democrats took the House of Representatives, while Republicans fortified their majority in the Senate. U.S. Attorney Jeff Sessions was fired the morning after the elections, a move that brought attention back to the ongoing Mueller investigation into the Trump administration and Russian meddling in the 2016 campaign. And with Democrats in control of the House of Representatives, the Trump administration gears up for new challenges and shifting priorities as it looks to the second half of the president's term and the campaign for re-election in 2020. And in an all-too-familiar scenario, a gunman took the lives of 12 people in a nightclub in Southern California, and a nation struggles to understand why the massacres happen and what can be done to prevent them. Gentlemen, welcome. Let's start with the midterm elections. Again, Democrats taking control of the House of Representatives, as predicted, and Republicans fortifying their majority in the Senate, also as predicted, I think. Let's take a look at the blue wave, as it were, the Democratic control or sort of wave of interest in voting power and assumed power. Did the blue wave actually happen, or was it more like a blue ripple? I'm going to start with you, Dan.
Michael, conservative Republicans have decided to say that it wasn't a blue wave. Blue is the color of the Democratic Party. Not a blue wave, but a blue puddle or a blue squirt.
Okay.
So the Republicans are being kind of derisive about it. They don't claim they had a red wave, but they claim they put up a red wall with how well they did in the Senate. And by the way, as we're speaking now, out of the 100 Senate seats, we still don't know what's going to happen with three of them. There were 35 Senate races, and three of them are not decided. And so, frankly, if they all went to the Democrats, then there wouldn't really be a change. 51 out of 100 seats would be Republican. To get into the details a little bit, Mississippi will be a re-vote in December because there were three candidates and no one got 50%. That almost everyone says will end up being Republican. So there will be a gain for them. And in Arizona and Florida, we don't know for sure. But the House maybe is what really counts. Just by having captured one of the two chambers of Congress, the Democrats will control every single committee. The chairman or chairwoman of every committee will be a Democrat. That changes the agenda, that allows them to have hearings, even investigations into any topic at all. And that's a big change because here in Washington, since President Trump was elected 2 years ago and he came into office, it's been all Republican.
There has been no check on power, essentially, with all three branches essentially in
I see your point. Even the Supreme Court is seen as a conservative body now since President Trump has proudly added two justices. He's been lucky that way. And so this will be a big change, just that the Democrats will bring up everything. We'll have hearings and investigations and a lot more questions about things that Trump is doing.
Steve, what were the races that caught your attention, and what do you think are the implications for the broad political view of the country, where we stand right now?
Yeah, well, it's tough out of 435 races and 35 Senate seats to pick a few.
But that's why we call on you.
But, well, there were a couple disappointments. Certainly, Beto O'Rourke not winning in Texas for the Democrats was a disappointment. And the Republicans did hold a couple key governor races. I do think, well, the Georgia race is still being determined, but I think the Secretary of State, Brian Kemp, there, despite some very, I think, legitimate concerns over the voting process, it looks like he'll prevail in Ohio as well.
Stephen, can I apologize for just a second? Because when I was speaking to people from the rest of the world, some of them wondered, why is the governor's race important? I mean, you mentioned Beto O'Rourke failing to be elected in Texas. That was for U.S. Senate, and Ted Cruz will continue as senator. But the governor's races, right, that's not of national importance. That doesn't affect Trump and his policies, or does it eventually?
Well, I think it does eventually. One is there's huge debate coming up into the census when they reapportion seats about who controls how you draw the map. So these state legislature battles throughout the country, again, where Democrats picked up seats across the nation, really, do have importance. And the governor's mansions as well. on some very key issues. There was a lot of talk during the campaign about health care. Governors play a huge role in that. You're starting to see, even in Republican states, an embrace of Obamacare. Even in the last messages of Trump's campaign message before, you know, before the midterms, he was even vaguely saying that the Democrats were putting Obamacare at risk. I mean, kind of an unbelievable thing for him to say.
Especially the provision about protecting those with the pre-existing conditions. That's the mantra for both sides now.
And so the fact that the Democrats did so well, obviously, you know, they're going to check his power. They're going to be investigating left and right, although they seem to be backing away from this idea of impeachment unless Mueller comes up with something really amazing. But on the other hand, Trump will still be able to nominate pretty much who he wants. Certainly, he's already taken advantage of that. By firing Jeff Sessions, and we don't know who he'll nominate on a permanent basis to
replace
him.
And we should remind the listeners, only the U.S. Senate is required to confirm cabinet members, judges, senior officials. And so that's where the Trump White House feels very relieved.
Yeah,
the Senate will confirm just about anybody.
And also for the Supreme Court, which has really been Trump's promise to true conservatives who aren't quite on board with him. But the fact that he can get conservative justices at the Supreme Court and at other senior levels of the judiciary through still provides a reason, really, for conservatives to support Trump.
Dan, as we finish up on this particular subject, President Trump really doubled down on the immigration message. And we talked about the red wall guarding against the blue wave. If there was a red wall, it was probably built by the bricks of this immigration resistance and the Kavanaugh. I think the Kavanaugh confirmation hearings were also quite a factor there. Do you think that he helped or hurt Republicans overall with those tactics?
Well, the signs are that Donald Trump actually was helpful in the places where he decided to go. He was going to places where he did very well 2 years ago running for president, and he wanted to energize his base of voters. And so we saw a lot of the rallies on TV and we heard the energy. And you can think, oh, that's a minority of people. But if they went out and voted, it made a big difference. So he's taking credit, of course. He says that he did make the difference and that where he campaigned, Republicans did really well. And Republican candidates who didn't want to see him at his White House news conference, he said they didn't want the embrace.
And he named them by name.
He wanted to shame some of those Republicans for turning their backs on him. And again, he said, they lost, goodbye, sorry, Mike, that kind of thing. So he was being very self-centered. It is his nature. But I do think that his huge number of rallies in the last 6 days of the campaign, he did 11 in 8 states. I think it probably did help his party, but again, in the Senate races. And what he said privately, sources I have that are close to Trump and hear his thinking, etc., he knew he would lose the House. Let's focus on the Senate. Let's celebrate that we held the Senate. And so he's celebrating. He has absolutely talked himself into a good mood that this midterm election went well for him. But let me be clear, liberal Democrats are also very happy that they won the House and will change the tone of what gets talked about and investigated here in Washington.
Well, there's no doubt that he was maybe the strongest political force that I've ever seen, you know, going into an election. He was on every ballot. It was a national sort of semi-referendum.
That's a great point. But also, you know, there's different analysis of both the commercials as well as what the candidates themselves were speaking about. And one of the fascinating things about it was they were not the candidates, the House candidates and the Senate candidates were not talking about Trump. It was the big elephant in the room. I guess that almost to the extent that they feel that the Trump effect is built in. So really neither the Democrats nor the Republicans. The Democrats' closing message was health care. The Republicans' closing message, as you were saying earlier, is immigration. So it's very interesting how, and actually in comparison to previous years, if you look at the data, this midterm was unique by how little the president was talked about by the candidates.
We're going to finish up there and move to another subject because just right after the elections, the morning after, I'm going to read the first line of his resignation letter. At your request, I am submitting my resignation. That is from the former now Attorney General Jeff Sessions. I don't think that it was any surprise that Jeff Sessions was let go, was fired by the president. I think that the timing was rather jarring. I'm going to start with you, Steve, your take on this. I'm sure that you weren't surprised by this. Were you surprised by the timing that the announcement came so soon after the election?
I was a little bit surprised. I actually wasn't. I thought that the shoes would start dropping quickly. Maybe I didn't expect, you know, that particular day. But, you know, it was, the writing was very clear on the wall. Jeff Sessions was going to leave. What's very interesting now is that his choice for acting attorney general has really caused some controversy.
That is President Trump's choice.
That's President Trump's choice. A man named Matt Whitaker, a former U.S. attorney, but someone who's been very outspoken in his criticism of the Mueller investigation and who now ostensibly leads it. And there's also a real question about whether Trump has the authority to name him, because Whitaker has not been confirmed for any role in the Justice Department.
And that is confirmed by the U.S. Senate, as Dan was speaking.
He was the chief of staff to the Attorney General.
Which I was going to bring to you, Dan. This is a very unusual situation to have someone be selected for that position when you have a sitting deputy attorney general. I believe that constitutionally there is some question about whether this is a legal appointment.
Well, let's sort it out. But the president is chief executive.
Is it really sorted out? I'm hearing lots of...
No, let's try to sort it out by naming who the people are involved in this. And so the president, really angry at his attorney general for more than a year. Jeff Sessions was on the outs, not getting along. Why? Because the attorney general recused himself, stepped aside from the Russia collusion investigation having to do with the Trump campaign. Jeff Sessions thought that was only fair because he'd been involved with the campaign. President Trump was angry at him for, quote, not protecting me. So, sure, the writing was on the wall. I was surprised the firing was right away because the perfect day would have been Friday, just before the weekend, when the president wasn't doing anything except for him and Melania Trump flying to Paris for the weekend. And so you could have broken the Jeff Sessions news. So I was surprised at the timing. Okay. Rod Rosenstein's been the deputy attorney general. President Trump doesn't like him either. And so instead they put Matt Whitaker in, but for a while he's acting attorney general. It'll be fascinating to see who becomes the nominee for the full job.
We're going to take a break right there. We'll come back and talk about Jeff Sessions some more and other topics after this break.
You're listening to Issues in the News on the Voice of America in Washington. If you would like to download a podcast of the program, it's free on iTunes. Just click on the iTunes tab on our website at voanews.com. Also, you can visit the program on Facebook and leave a comment or two while you're there. Current Affairs with Carol Castiel, and don't forget to like us as well. Now back to our panel. Steve Goldstein, Washington Bureau Chief for MarketWatch, and Dan Raviv, National Correspondent for Israeli-based I-24 News. Our moderator is Michael Williams, CBS Radio contributor.
So, we have Jeff Sessions out. We have Matt Whitaker in as an appointment. We have a Democratic House of Representatives that has been elected but has not taken charge. We have 2 months before Democrats actually take their place on Capitol Hill. What does this mean for the Mueller investigation right now? How much can this appointment do to stop that investigation, if that's in fact their intent?
I think it's kind of understood by everybody that we're in the closing phase of the Mueller investigation. And it's also seems likely that he will write a report about Trump's activities rather than bring a legal case. And that's not from any real insider news that I have, but just sort of an interpretation.
That's your sense of what?
Of how things are going, the back and forth between President Trump's lawyers and the special counsel. So I think Mueller is going to leave it to Congress to make these decisions. And in some way, him winding down the investigation comes at an appropriate time. Really, the body that was meant to do these checks and balances is the U.S. Congress. And now you have a U.S. Congress that seems to be interested in having that role, or you will
highly
in January.
as
opposed to 2 years where they wanted to kind of cover their eyes. And so It'll be obviously fascinating to see if there will be any more indictments. There's talk also about perhaps Trump's son, Donald Trump Jr., facing some legal jeopardy. But really, I think we're at a different stage. He was probably going to wind it down anyway.
Stephen, what could be difficult is that Mueller, the investigator, the prosecutor, doesn't work for Congress. He officially works for the Department of Justice. And that's now in the hands of this acting attorney general, Matt Whitaker, who's such a Trump loyalist. I think at the least, Whitaker may try to order Bob Mueller to wind it up quickly. Write your report. Get it done. And then the Trump White House would generally denigrate the findings. And then you're right, Congress would say, we want to see that report because we might want to hold hearings and follow up. And of course, if they think that President Trump committed crimes, they might even talk about impeachment, which is up to the House of Representatives. I think things are going to start moving more quickly. There was a quiet period because of the midterm election campaign.
Dan, does the firing of Jeff Sessions constitute obstruction of justice?
Well, that's one of the questions that's around, and people would have to reach their own conclusion. The firing of James Comey as FBI director last year made a lot of critics of Trump say, wow, why was the FBI director fired? That must be obstructing justice, because obviously Comey was finding out some things. And President Trump made reference to the Russia investigation, and that was what annoyed him. But, you know, again, this is a case where the chief executive of the United States will be able to do these things. Or as his critics would put it, Trump can get away with this stuff. He's the president. So you may have that opinion that firing Jeff Sessions, an attorney general whom he did not like, was some obstruction. Or you may just say he really didn't like Sessions. He had to get rid of him. It may just be that.
Let's talk about what the ramifications are of this appointment, of the election, sort of pull that all together and talk about the next 2 years of the Trump administration, the back half of presidency, and what they are positioning for a reelection campaign in 2020. Key policy issues for the Republicans, Steve. They have a lot of good news. They have a lot of accomplishment that they can talk to. We talk about Supreme Court justices being appointed. We talk about a booming economy. There's a lot of positive, a lot of sunshine you can point to. They seem to choose more of the dark side, if you will, when we're talking about immigration, crime, these sorts of things. What do you think will be the policy focuses for the administration in the next 2 years?
Well, I think you pinpointed something. I think the dialogue will be very negative, and it will continue to be. But in terms of actual policy, I'm going to kind of rely on kind of the financial markets. They rallied after the midterm elections, and people are wondering, well, why would that be? And I think, you know, financial markets, I think, accurately have seen that with the Democrats in charge of the House, that health care will be protected, and that's very important for the insurance industry. And they accurately see that with the Senate in Republican hands, that the tax cuts will be maintained. And so you'll have gridlock. There's some fanciful talk about infrastructure spending. I'm not personally a believer that there's really a bipartisan appetite to do it. So I think you'll have a much posturing and very little accomplished in these next 2 years. And I think that might serve everybody just fine. I think the Democrats, they want to investigate. They also want to trot out some of their own policy initiatives that they know won't become law, but they want to campaign on what's been a very leftward move in the on the Democratic base. And I think the Republicans want to continue this message of kind of anti-immigration and anti-trade, and which they feel serves their base quite well.
Can I talk about immigration for just a second? Because, of course, a lot of our listeners around the world will wonder, is it harder to get into the United States? And it will continue to get somewhat harder. Now, President Trump does say, let's put it out there, we do need more workers, but they have to enter legally, and we want to see them on merit. We don't want a visa lottery system anymore. On the borders itself, especially the Mexican border, he did put out an executive order this past week that said it's going to be harder to apply for asylum, to claim that your home country is dangerous. You must go now to an established border entry point, such as south of San Diego or a special point in Texas. You can't just go anywhere, cross the border, and claim political asylum. He's trying to make all of that harder. Will Congress intervene? Well, if the Democrats and Republicans can't agree on anything, then no, Congress won't intervene. Republicans will say it's great for security to make it harder to enter the U.S., and Democrat liberals will say it's a horrible message to send to the world that America is no longer a welcoming country.
Let's talk a little bit about the tone and the method that President Trump will use to govern over the next 2 years. Clearly, he's been rather aggressive in these first two, and it seemed that sort of turned up a notch during these past elections. For the next 2 years, we saw the press conference right after the elections where he took a very aggressive stance, especially towards certain perceived liberal news outlets. Do you think that the president, now that he has a counterbalance in presumably Nancy Pelosi and the Democrats in the House of Representatives, will he be put into a position where he will want to actually negotiate and get some lawmaking done, or will he simply take a warlike stance, as the term's been thrown around?
Michael, first I want to report to you what the Trump White House thinks. They think they're in a win-win position, that if the president can work with, we assume, Speaker of the House Nancy Pelosi, then President Trump will claim credit for whatever gets done, whatever gets passed. He'll claim credit, and he thinks he'll get it. If, on the other hand, Democrats refuse to work with him and only want to give him a hard time, then he will blame them for everything, and he feels that's going to help him get reelected president 2 years from now. So his tone will depend on how things go. Based on that first news conference after the election, he's still in a belligerent mood. He especially wants to be very tough on the media. The CNN correspondent at the White House, Jim Acosta, his press pass to enter the White House grounds was canceled. That's almost unprecedented after a little verbal altercation with the president. So the tone is very Trump-like in that belligerent way.
I totally agree, and I think I agree with your position that he will probably be more aggressive in his stance. I think compromise equals a one-term presidency. Let's talk a little bit, unfortunately, about this shooting in California. 12 killed at college night in a club in Thousand Oaks, California. The victims included many young people, a police officer who was days away from retirement, and incredibly, a Navy SEAL who also survived the mass shooting in Las Vegas last year that took 58 lives. Kind of astonishing, that sort of confluence of events. Yes. Steve, we'll go to you. Right now, we just have a couple of minutes. Is there a... has there been a motive? Was it at all politically driven, as was the shooting in Pittsburgh?
It doesn't appear to be politically driven. It was a former Marine, and I think it does highlight that many soldiers who come back from tours of duty have issues. This person was known to authorities.
Yeah.
This wasn't somebody new on the radar screen. And that's another, I think, unfortunate thing about some of these mass shootings is... oftentimes, the authorities do know who these people are in advance, and nothing seems to happen. And I think that's pretty dispiriting as a nation, whether part of that is certainly mental health. The U.S. struggles to find the correct answers to some of these issues, and law enforcement struggles to, even when they know people who are bad actors, who've committed other infractions, nothing gets done.
Nothing gets done, yeah.
Dan, I wanted to go to
struggle.
You.
And when it comes to guns and owning guns seems to be part of American society. So, again, you put it to the people in power, President Trump and other Republicans, they don't think there has to be any change in gun laws. Democrats generally feel kind of helpless. They can't change it. But so that's part of American society. So when there's someone who's mentally imbalanced and the authorities think they can't do anything, and you have the popularity of guns in our society... well, no wonder some people say you just need metal detectors and more security at almost any place that the public goes to. But do we want to live like that?
Yeah, I was sort of stunned by the lack of reaction from public officials this time. I heard virtually nothing from any elected official.
The last mass shooting was 11 people killed in a synagogue in Pittsburgh. And there was some concern, of course, about a rise in anti-Semitism, and that was a hate crime. This one in California is inexplicable due to one disturbed young man who had been in the U.S. Marine Corps. Very disturbing.
Let me give you a statistic. 311 days of 2018 have produced 307 mass shootings, with mass shootings being defined as people four or more people losing their lives in that incident. And so I just want to ask of ourselves, is that the new normal? That's all the time we have. Thanks to Steve Goldstein, Washington Bureau Chief for MarketWatch, and Dan Raviv, National Correspondent for Israeli-based I-24 News. This program is produced by VOA's Current Affairs. Our engineer is Joe Gill, and I'm Michael Williams, CBS Radio contributor. Thanks for listening.